May it please the Court, Ben Flowers on behalf of Lawrence Thompson. I'll do my best to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The Court in this case is required to view the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Thompson. And viewed in that light, the facts establish that Officer Copeland violated his clearly established Fourth Amendment rights in at least 3 ways. First, he performed a search that he labeled an inventory search that was motivated entirely by investigatory intent. Second, that search failed to comply with the governing inventory search procedures. And finally, his arrest involved the use of excessive force. So I'll begin with the first point. It's undisputed in this case that searches motivated entirely by investigatory intent do not come within the inventory search exception to the warrant requirement of the Fourth Amendment. And there were various facts here that could lead a jury to conclude that this search was motivated entirely by investigatory intent. The first, and I think the most important, is that Officer Copeland did not even begin to record an inventory in this case. And that's particularly telling because he himself said that the entire car was cluttered, including the front of the car, that he began by searching the front of the car, and that he didn't find the gun until he got to the back of the car. Well, if all that's true, he should have had a fairly lengthy inventory by the time, before he even found the gun at issue. Based on that, a jury could find that the real reason for the search, the only reason, was his investigatory intent.
Counsel, what happened in state court? What happened to the state court charges?
The state court charges were thrown out because the judge concluded that under state law, the search and the stop itself were pretextual. Washington law, unlike the Fourth Amendment, prohibits even pretextual stops.
I thought that might have been your first point, but go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt. I just want to make sure.
Well, I just want to clarify that it stopped at the stop with the state court, right?
No, the state court also found that the inventory search itself.
Well, because that followed the stop, correct?
The pretextual stop.
The pretextual stop, but also said that the inventory search itself was nothing more than an excuse to look for evidence. Mm-hmm. So the state court did make that finding. In addition to the inventory sheets missing, you have Officer Copeland shifting explanations. He at first said he searched the car because it was impounded. It wasn't until the district court said, that's not enough, I need an inventory search policy, that he claimed to have searched the car based on such a policy. A jury could reasonably infer from that that the real reason he did this was something else than he was grasping at straws to try to find a reason to justify.
Well, where does the Burien ordinance figure in, which basically says if you impound a vehicle, then you must do a search? How does that fit into
It's slightly different than that. The Burien ordinance says that you must impound the car after these arrests. It's more nuanced than that because Washington's constitution requires that you consider reasonable impoundments, and that would, of course, trump the local ordinance. It's the sheriff department's policy that requires the search.
The search.
After an impoundment. And that was never mentioned until after he lost the first motion to dismiss. And again, a jury could find, they don't have to, but they could find that suggests that the real motive was something else, was in fact investigatory. Finally, he conceded that he pulled Thompson over for pretextual reasons, that he saw stuff during the stop that led him to believe that there may have been evidence of some more significant crime. In light of the lack of an inventory and shifting explanations and that, a jury might reasonably conclude that the real reason for the search, the only reason, was investigatory intent. But even moving beyond investigatory intent, it's again undisputed, the law is undisputed, that inventory searches must comply with the inventory search procedures by which they're governed. The one here did not for various reasons. Number one, there's at least evidence that he didn't even know the policy existed, and you cannot perform an inventory search pursuant to a policy that you don't know exists. In addition to that, this court has held in United States v. Wantless and has applied in cases since, like United States v.
Well,
Maddox.
Let me just stop there. You might not know it existed, but if you complied with it, would it then matter?
It would not.
Okay.
Because the reason is it has to be pursuant to, and a search is not pursuant
Correct.
To if you don't know it exists. And taken from the perspective of a reasonable officer, as far as he knew, if he doesn't know about the policy, then as far as he knows, he's conducting a search not governed by a policy at all, and that's plainly unconstitutional under cases like Colorado v. Bertin, note 6 of that.
How much time elapsed between the actual stop and the search?
I don't think that's in the record, Your Honor.
Okay.
So finally, it has to comply, as I noted, it has to comply with state law. That's implicitly incorporated into the policy itself. Washington state law requires you consider reasonable alternatives to impoundment. The state court here found that he didn't do that, and reasonably so. I think a jury could make the same determination. In addition to that, the policy itself forbids exploratory searches, and if I'm not mistaken, Officer Copeland does not even argue in his brief that the search wasn't pretextual in violation of that policy. Finally, I'll move on to excessive force. The critical case here is Robinson, and in that case, this court held that a man who was accused of using a shotgun to shoot two dogs, killing one of them, his Fourth Amendment rights were violated when the police pointed a weapon at his head while he was approaching them calmly. They held that that violated his Fourth Amendment rights. Here, this case follows a fortiori from the facts of that case. For one thing, unlike Mr. Robinson, who was believed to be unarmed, Mr. Thompson was known to be unarmed because he had already been patted down. Unlike Robinson, who was approaching officers, Copeland was sitting calmly on the bumper of a police cruiser under the supervision of another armed officer.
So can you go to the facts that are tough for you? It's late at night, mm-hmm. right? And there was a gun. And by the time Officer Copeland did this action that's disputed, he was aware that your client had a prior firearms conviction, right? Those are the ones that are tough for you.
Admittedly.
And the gun's how many feet away? What's the undisputed number? Is it 15?
10 to 15 feet, somewhere in that range.
10 to 15. So what about that? Can you cut to that, Chase?
Please? So even if – I agree that those are the most problematic facts for us. But still, under Robinson, he was 3 to 6 feet away when they pointed the guns at his head, not 10 to 15. They didn't know that he was unarmed.
Did Robinson have a prior firearms conviction?
Not to my knowledge.
But the earlier report, he approached. There had been a shooting of a dog, and he approached and said, I'm the one involved in that shooting.
That's correct.
Right? They had that.
They did know that. And in addition to all of this, even if we're not disputing that it was reasonable to unholster the gun and use the low-ready alternative, which Officer Copeland himself claims he used. In Green, for example, this court held that the availability of that alternative makes the pointing of gun at someone's head constitute excessive force. And that same reasoning applies here, even given all of the facts that Your Honor noted. Finally, I want to briefly note that even if you find that there may be a Fourth Amendment violation here, but that it's not sufficiently clearly established so that Officer Copeland gets qualified immunity, that would not get the municipality off the hook. The reason is municipalities do not get qualified immunity. And here, Thompson alleged that the municipality engaged in a failure to supervise that led to the deprivation of his rights. Such that those causes of actions have two elements. First, constructive or actual knowledge. Second, causation. With respect to constructive knowledge, he alleged that they failed to supervise, specifically that they failed to investigate incidents involving misconduct with firearms and excessive force. With respect to causation, he expressly says that the policy resulted in his injury. And that would be more than enough to get that claim past motion to dismiss. And the district court erred in concluding otherwise. Unless there are questions.
Do you want to save
the remaining time? I would. Thank you.
Good morning. Endel Kolda for all defendants in this matter. Deputy Pete Copeland should enjoy qualified immunity because Lawrence Thompson did not have a clearly established right to either have his car impounded without an inventory search or to be taken into custody, arrested for a serious felony offense while a loaded revolver was nearby and accessible. It's Thompson's burden to show that he had a clearly established right, and he hasn't done that.
Counsel, so if we can cut to the chase again, forgive me for interrupting, but I'm looking at Robinson, and you both cite this case extensively. It's a 2002 en banc decision, and it starts, the first line in the opinion is, we took this case en banc in order to clarify the law of the, you've read it.
Yes.
It's pretty rare that we have that statement right up front. So what was unknown?
Robinson's a different case. I'm not saying it couldn't be a gun pointing case, couldn't be clearly established under certain circumstances, but Robinson wasn't being arrested.
But let's hear your best argument about distinguishing Robinson, if we could.
Robinson was an investigation. Robinson was clearly unarmed. The report was he'd had a shotgun, but when he approached, he wasn't carrying a shotgun. That was obvious.
Still had been patted down.
He had been patted down. You know, that's an initial check. You could still be armed after you're patted down, but the revolver was still the distance between you and me.
That's where I think you have to. He could have, he might have, but the fact is the revolver's in the car, correct?
Yes.
10 to 15 feet away, right over there. He's been patted down, and they have him under control. He's not handcuffed yet.
Correct.
There's two officers, right?
Correct.
Is there any evidence here that at the point when he points the gun, that he is armed?
He is close to a weapon.
No.
Yeah.
Is
Does
there
he have
any
an,
evidence that he is armed at that time?
No, but he's within he's within seconds of a loaded revolver.
So that's really the kind of the crux here is the proximity and
Correct.
Potential action on his
Yes,
part.
And Your Honor, it's important to remember that although there were two police officers here, this is not a case of overwhelming force, overwhelming police presence. Deputy Copeland weighed about 200 pounds, was 5'7", I believe the record shows. Mr. Thompson was 6 feet, 265 pounds, and when you're moving,
a large person,
and you got momentum going on, the whole point is to not even get into that situation. There's an information problem when you're taking somebody into custody. A lot of situations that start out as a traffic stop and a felony arrest that seem like they're going well don't end up going well, and the statistics bear that out. So you don't want him to even take a chance and go for the gun. And so the gun is displayed.
It wasn't just displayed. That's the point. The opposing counsel acknowledges that it would have been okay to unholster the gun. The problem is, the allegation is, the gun was pointed at his head.
I understand that, and I understand for purposes of this appeal we have to accept that as,
right,
as established. Yes. Nevertheless, it was very brief, and it achieved its desired effect. And to get back to Your Honor's earlier question about the distinctions between Robinson.
Thank you.
Remember, Robinson approached. At that point, it was just an investigation. We have already PC for a serious felony arrest, a gun crime, with knowledge of a prior gun offense, not the case in Robinson. Secondly, it was pointed at his head at very close distance. And then he was detained, handcuffed and detained for 10, 15 minutes. No, I believe it was 15 to 30 minutes in the record, and then released because it turned out he hadn't committed any crimes. That's very different than a situation where somebody's being arrested for a felony.
Well, this individual, it struck me as pretty comparable, counsel, because he's pulled over for a routine a traffic violation. He immediately apologized. There weren't harsh words. He apologized for the infraction. He was sitting, I think as Judge McEwen described, on the bumper quietly. There weren't any of the bells and whistles that we are, you know, sort of indicators that we often see.
Well, it started out as a traffic stop for infractions. It became a misdemeanor arrest. And then you had the mandatory impound ordinance under the Burien Municipal Code. And then an impound search, which was going to happen as soon as the vehicle was impounded, regardless of whether Deputy Copeland had some kind of secondary motive in this case. At that point, when he found the gun, it became a felony arrest. So, yes, it started out as a fairly lower-key traffic stop and became a much more serious offense.
Well, do you have a timeline? I mean, we read the record, but can you construct for us from the record that, you know, once they discover the gun, then they have him over there on the car, on the bumper. What is our time frame here? Because your argument is that things could happen in seconds. For example, they could spring mm-hmm. over to the car. I guess mm-hmm. that's your argument. But what kind of time frame are we looking at here to make a judgment?
The best, there's no MDT printout, which we would normally use if that had been a primary issue. So I can only point to the cert for probable cause, which is appended to Deputy Copeland's declaration in the record, and I can get the ERs if the court wants. But essentially, so there are no time stamps, but in terms of the sequence of events, the part that's not clear is how long it took Deputy Fitchett to arrive as backup once the decision to arrest.
But he was called as backup, right? He wasn't riding along in the car. His second car arrived.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. To do an inventory search. At this point, he's still sitting on the bumper unhandcuffed, as he has been the entire time. Mm-hmm. Then Deputy Copeland starts to do the inventory, which he has to do. He's compelled to do by the sheriff's office policy. He sees some things in the front, and, of course, he's a trained observer, so he's going to note that information because he's doing, you know, he's provides information for a PC cert later on after he realizes there's PC for a gun crime. Then he sees the bag in the back in the floorboard and behind the passenger seat mm-hmm. With the handles up. He mm-hmm. sees the revolver pointing up, and as the court knows, with the revolver, you can see whether it's loaded. He's like, there's a gun.
Are you asking us, forgive me for interrupting, are you asking us, it seems like you're relying on the prior firearms offense in terms of the escalation that you've described.
Correct.
The prior firearms conviction.
Yes.
And the presence of this gun 10 or 15 feet away. Are you asking us to say that those two facts alone would be enough to point a gun at somebody's head? Anytime there's a prior felon in possession, if there's a gun within 10 or 15 feet, an officer is justified in pointing a gun at his head?
It's an interesting question. I would say not necessarily, but I think in this circumstance, we're late at night. It's also a felony arrest situation. And I think that is one of the key factors that distinguishes this case from Robinson and any number.
Forgive me, but I want to make sure I'm following you. I know I'm interrupting, but your time is ticking.
Fine.
So when you say in this situation, wouldn't it always be the case that there's PC for an arrest if there's somebody who's got a prior firearms conviction and there's a gun within 10 or 15 feet? That's going to be your argument, it seems to me. That's going to be the government's argument. So I'm just wondering if this isn't necessarily the case that you're asking us to say, that those two facts alone would be enough to warrant the use of the threat of lethal force.
I think if it was a misdemeanor arrest, it's not as strong a case. In this case, we had a felony arrest, and we knew it wasn't his first time. So I think it does make it more serious, because at that point, Deputy Copeland...
Yeah, but I'm just looking kind of for... Does that mean the answer to my question is yes? That would be enough to use lethal force?
It might be, Your Honor. Okay. Yeah, maybe.
I guess the question is whether, in a circumstance like that, the officer can be second-guessed for assuming the worst.
Well, we would argue no, particularly given the outcome in this case. I mean, the handcuffing took place. He was asked to get on the ground. He was handcuffed. There was no injury to Mr. Thompson. That's undisputed in the record. So actually, this arrest ended up going off without a hitch, and that's good. But at the time that the deputy points his gun, that's an unknown. And he doesn't have that information, and he doesn't know if Mr. Thompson is going to cooperate with being taken into custody for yet another felony. And I would point out the record does show that, in fact, this was Mr. Thompson's fifth or sixth gun possession crime, although, admittedly, Deputy Copeland didn't know it was that many offenses at that
particular
moment.
Does it matter that he coupled this conduct with the threat to kill him if he didn't comply?
Well, he said, if you accept what Thompson right. says, he said, if you move, I'll kill you, or something you. Along those mm-hmm. lines. It's qualified with the statement, don't move. While those might not be the ideal, most professional things to say, it, you know, often rough language is used in order to get people to comply with being taken into custody. I think this was different. If this was a mere investigation, I think it would be different. If it was a minor offense or a misdemeanor, it was not. It was a traffic stop late at night with a loaded gun present and a serious felony offense.
Thank you.
I'll wrap up. Thank you. We ask that you affirm.
Thank you.
Your Honors, one brief point, and then I can stop. I would just refer Your Honors to the case, the First Circuit decision in Stamps v. City of Framingham. I'm not arguing that case is binding or anything like that. The reason it's useful is because it shows the problems with officers pointing their guns at suspects' heads when they don't have a reason to do so. In that case, the officer was holding an individual at gunpoint. He slipped, and he killed the man. And that is the problem that arises in cases like this that are avoided by simply pointing the gun low and away, as he claims to have done. So unless there are further questions,
There's just one, if I could. Do you dispute that the officer would have been justified in unholstering his gun?
No.
Displaying it?
He would have absolutely been justified in doing that.
Thank you.
So unless there are further questions, we ask that you reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you. I'd like to thank both counsel for your argument. I especially would like to thank Mr. Flowers for participating in our pro bono program, which I think is helpful not only to the clients, but to the court, and also really to opposing counsel, so that they have a good brief. So I thank you. And I also note there's another Michael Flowers who's an attorney in Columbus, Ohio, is there not? Do you know him?
If there is, I don't know him.
Okay, well, maybe you should meet him since you share at least two of the same names. All right, thank you very much for your argument this morning. The case of Thompson versus Copeland is submitted.